Hi, Robert. Welcome again to the Commerce Talks podcast. We've recorded once, but somehow the recording, we are missing it. We haven't found it. But now we are even better prepared. Before we are getting into the questions about like Bitcoin, instant payment, digital euro, please introduce yourself and your company.
Sure. So back again, new and improved. My name is Robert. I am the CEO of the Unser Group. And Unser really is a group of businesses in the payment and software space that came together to form one united product, one ecosystem to be able to provide a merchant with everything they need in order to digitize their commerce. So what does Unser do? We have a full-fledged platform, bringing ecosystem where we deliver point-of-sale payments, we do cashier software, we do full PSP gateway with its services, with own white label buy now pay later solution acquirer or connected to the schemes, and with that we provide a full ecosystem, basically everything a merchant might need to grow its business.
Can you give us some like rough numbers, how many markets, employees, revenue going through the platform, so people understand the sheer scale of Unser?
Of course. So we of course, in the nature of e-commerce, it is very international, but our core markets really are what we call DACH and Nordics. And if you zoom in, it's really Germany, Austria, and Denmark, which are our main markets.
Mm.
And we have a bit over 700 employees. We have revenue of north of 200 million, net revenue of north of 100 million. And we are growing profitably.
Very good. Good to hear in these times. And you're the CEO, but not the founder. Is this correct?
Yes, that's correct. So essentially, Unser is a merger company where each one of the companies that came into Unser, of course, had its own founder. Some of the founders are still in the business, but most of them have left to other endeavors. And I was essentially brought in to build this company out, build it as a one company with one experience, one team, one process, one culture, and grow it in the market and fulfill its potential.
In the high growth?
I've been here now for 3.5 years.
In the high growth phases of e-commerce, like starting in 2010, I saw a lot of payment companies usually sponsoring events, being around at e-commerce fairs. All were coming more or less with the same pitch. Please add our payment methods. Then like the checkout rate will increase 10% or 1% point, whatever. Obviously, that could not have been true even like 10 years back. But today, so where are your new customers are coming from? Because e-commerce seems to be not a flattish market, but it's not growing like 10, 20, 30% anymore. It becomes like a normal market now. But as a high growth company, where are your new businesses are coming from? Outside of the e-commerce space, or B2B businesses, for example, other distribution businesses?
So as in any market, even if it's not as boom as it was 10 years ago, there's a constant flow of new business coming in, businesses growing and being more successful, venturing out into new markets, new goods, new projects, and at the same time, other businesses losing market share and going out of business, right? So it's still a very dynamic place where it is not the case that you just need to be online to grow. A lot of, you know, expertise and also optimizing your payment side is part of being able to win against competition. So where do our customers come from? It's new entrants to the market. It's larger merchants shifting their business to us.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, and that's where we really help, is that the differences between on and offline have been fading over the past years, but are fading more and more. And this is also happening to smaller merchants. So also mid-market SME merchants are trying to integrate on and offline and trying to create online experiences for their offline store and vice versa, having pop-up stores or things like that for their online stores. So since we provide that full service between on and offline from one suite with one experience, that's where we see a lot of additional customers come in.
And when I was preparing for this podcast, obviously the US election happened, and the US election actually drove like one of our favorite topics a lot, which is digital currency based on the blockchain, namely Bitcoin. So, and last time when we recorded this, I think the Bitcoin had like a drop back to, I don't know, 30K or so. Now it becomes like a new gold rush. And I'm wondering, like, from a payment provider perspective or payment company like yours, is it something that becomes really relevant now for our industry, or is it something I still can ignore? Because like last 10 years, I tried to ignore this topic, and everybody approaching me via LinkedIn or on conferences, I say like, go away, go scam your grandma.
So the question is, what is really the role of cryptocurrency today, right? It used to be just Bitcoin. Now there's probably more types of cryptocurrency than there's Bitcoins. So they all have their role to play, but mostly it really is an investment product, right? It's the most of the back and forth of Bitcoin, in my sense, is really, really trading. So it is relevant for payment companies, because clearly if you want to buy Bitcoin, you need to make a transaction, which is usually not with Bitcoin, right? So we have a few of the larger platforms as customer. And of course, that's good for us, because we saw a massive spike in transactions with these players.
But you don't expect it as a checkout method in the coming future in online shops?
As a checkout method, it has been decreasing over time, not increasing. It's, you know, you can go online, you see lots of videos of people that have once decided to use a Bitcoin to buy pizza, and that pizza is now worth 80 million. And these are paraded as the stupid people from the past that didn't understand the value of Bitcoin, even though probably they were one of the early adapters. So the role that Bitcoin plays in the normal transaction market of buying pizzas, I think that is still quite limited. Also, because the people that are Bitcoin enthusiasts that would use it are actually the ones that believe it will continue to go up. So I think there's an inherent conflict there.
Do you hold Bitcoin?
I do have some Bitcoin, yes.
Okay. And is it easy for end consumers like me to really hold it, or it's more advisable to buy I've heard about Bitcoin ETFs, kind of ETFs you can buy in which is investing in Bitcoin somehow.
Well, I wouldn't call myself a Bitcoin expert and key follower and enthusiast, but yeah, I mean, it's very easy to just get a Bitcoin account, one of the main names, and just buy some Bitcoin. You can even do it now through your banks, right? N26, Revolut, you name them, they all offer Bitcoin as well.
Ah, okay. So I can buy it like gold. Okay, interesting. Okay, but let's go to a more like serious topic. Another hot topic discussed now in the digital fintech space is, how is it called? The Vero app?
Vero, yeah.
Is it like, so I remember there were like a lot of like approaches of like creating an alternative to the PayPal infrastructure in Europe. Is it just another dead horse, or is it really something that I will use in the future to pay on my Kleinanzeigen.de purchase?
Well, I don't have a glass ball. The future will tell. I think it's, you know, there's just been, and that's what keeps payments an interesting industry to work in. There's constant developments, and there's new payment methods coming up, and new payment methods going out of business, and some are growing in popularity and some are decreasing in popularity. I think what it solves for from a merchant perspective and from a fraud risk perspective makes a lot of sense. It's potentially also very much cheaper than, for instance, PayPal. And there's a lot of power behind it, with the banks, of course, funding it. So there's a lot to say for it. But whether it will be a success really, really is dependent on consumers using it.
But how is how will this be achieved? So my understanding from the early success of PayPal was, as it was a part of the eBay ecosystem, so every eBay user more or less could easily create a PayPal account, and then PayPal obviously was implemented in other online shops. But initially, the distribution of PayPal among the consumers was driven by eBay. That's at least how I remember. it. Correct me if I'm wrong. Mm. So, and let's assume Vero is a bit cheaper and has a more backing from European banks. I think right now it's more like German banks or so. But let's say there's more backing, more structure, a couple of like theoretical win-wins. What is the distribution strategy here? Because if you're not pushing it through big platforms like Amazon, Zalando now, with some price advantage, for example, so your product or your purchase is like 0.3% cheaper because of using Vero, for example. Have you heard something about it? About this because it's all about the distribution and marketing.
It is, and I think eBay forcing it was just one. It is much more that at that point in time, PayPal was one of the first companies to really solve a problem, which was there, which is paying online being clunky and being prone to fraud, right? So they solved the problem and therefore they got the adaption. The problem that Vero is solving in that sense is now smaller because paying online has become easy and without much risk. However, what I understand from their go-to-market is that it's what they're initially trying to tap into is not transactions from merchant to consumer or vice versa. It is between consumers. So
is this so-called instant payment kind of thing, what they want to call? Last time we recorded, we talked about like...
It's peer-to-peer payments, right? So it's what PayPal tries to tap into a little bit in Germany, but you need a PayPal account for it. With Vero, you just need a bank account, and then you can easily share a bill between friends, ask for your friend's money for either a beer or for their part of the holiday that you did together. You know, just easy payments between friends.
But how does that work? Let's say
lots of adoption, take that adoption towards the merchants.
Okay, let's say we are going to vacations together. So how does today, if a friend is sending me money or I'm sending you money, it's usually via PayPal. So send me like 200 euros for this kind of dinner or holiday kind of thing. But now we are going to dinner together. I'm paying with my credit card or with my debit card. Instead of me sending you my PayPal email address, so how I'm getting money with Vero or with this kind of peer-to-peer payment?
Yeah, you can just send the link. So and it goes directly also from your bank account. So it works. I mean, the use case is similar as you would do it with the PayPal. It's just the coverage is a bit larger than the coverage of PayPal, right? And you see in many, many other markets, in the Netherlands, in Denmark, in Sweden, with Swish, in Switzerland, in Spain, they all have their local alternatives to this. And it really, really took a flight and became hugely popular in a very short time frame. And then that adaption went into the actual retail space.
Ah, okay. But in Sweden, it's called Swish, right?
It's Swish, exactly.
Yeah, so
Swish, but then for Germany.
But there, I understand if you are even buying some, I don't know, tomatoes or eggs at like a local farmer's stand, there's kind of a mobile number where you can send money to with your mobile phone somehow. There's not even a link needed, or you can scan a QR code also. Is this like the same setup then with Vero?
What I understand is that the trajectory that they want to do exactly. And then evolve from that by bringing all these local schemes together into one European scheme. That's the longer term dream.
Because for the banks, if the banks own this kind of system, they would benefit from having like one less layer in the whole like payment phase, where like PayPal, for example, would take out 1% of the GMV, like as a risk fee, like the credit card payment gateways. So this is more or less how I need to understand it, right? But when a merchant eventually, can you pay in Sweden with Swish at an online shop?
Yes, you can.
And then there's no fee involved, or it's like a lower fee involved compared to PayPal or MasterCard?
It's a much lower fee than a PayPal or a credit card. So essentially, this is also a European initiative, just like the digital euro, which I...
We will come to that in a minute. Well, we will come to that in a minute.
To decrease dependency on the big Americans that are usually profitable with the fees they generate, which essentially you could say is a... It's a bit of a tax on society, and it's a dependency.
Okay, let's see.
But the challenge is to be able to get the confidence and get the infrastructure there that it becomes a viable alternative that also consumers adapt to. And with many of these payment initiatives, the rhetoric is a lot around the benefits for banks, for governments, for fraud protection, and certainly also for merchants. But at the end, the consumer makes the buying decision, and they sometimes forget the benefit for the consumer.
Yeah,
if you're used to doing that transaction with the PayPal, and then you move it to doing it with Vero, there's no incremental big benefit that's easy to explain. And the consumer doesn't care that much that it costs merchant less, right? So I think that is something that they will find a challenge to really articulate.
Okay, got it. But I think what's important to understand is that not everybody in Europe has like a PayPal account, right? I don't know what the share of PayPal account is. I don't know, 10% in Europe? I don't know how many PayPal accounts are there. I will.
In Germany, it's higher, but in Europe, it's not. There's countries where PayPal is not used at all.
Ah, okay. So like 10-20% as like a European share, that could be in the ballpark, which is correct?
I don't know, but wouldn't be far off.
Okay, cool.
More towards it then, I guess.
Okay, then, okay, Vero, I understand. I will follow this development because that totally makes more sense than all the other approaches I've seen so far. And I saw this, how it works in Sweden, and everybody who's using it is like bragging about, that's really cool, you should have it. So let's see. It really depends if all the banks can implement it then. But we will see it next year, I guess. It's going to be something like we see hitting the ground in 2025. But let's stick with the digital euro topic. You still have to explain to me again what it is, because on my bank account, it's digital already. And I guess like most of the money we are seeing in the banking system is not printed anymore. So it's somehow digital. That's how like a non-fintech guy would look at this overall. So what problem is a digital euro solving? Let's start with this.
What problem is it solving? I mean, it's an initiative by the European Union where they want to make digital payments more efficient across Europe and create a secure and trusted currency backed by the ECB. So at the end, it just means that they want to make European payments less dependent on non-European private companies. So essentially a European scheme that can rival the networks of a Visa and MasterCard, for example.
So it's kind of a new payment gateway, like the Visa, MasterCard, Amex kind of gateway?
It is a digital currency that essentially is a cryptocurrency, but then it's backed by the European Central Bank. So it's a guaranteed backed currency rather than just pure speculation what the value is.
Ah, okay. So it's kind of the European version of the Bitcoin.
You could say so.
Yeah, we have to make it simple because otherwise the listeners won't understand it. So I need to understand.
Exactly. And they wanted to have it basically function as cash, but then a digital version of it. So.
But when I use this digital euro, paying something at the farmer's market, and then the farmer is like taking cash from the bank account, then the digital euro is somehow converted into the real euro again? It's very confusing for me, I have to say.
It is. It's not that confusing if you try to make it simple, right? Essentially, it's a digital version of cash. Now, cash, if it's on your account, it's also a digital version.
Yeah.
But how it transacts and how it works is essentially like central bank backs Bitcoin, where they want to essentially make this free of use.
Okay, though let's call it then Eurocoin, right? So it's maybe it's easier to understand. So in my bank account,
maybe you should quickly trademark that name.
But then in my bank account, it will not show as euro, but as a Eurocoin. As today, the Bitcoin would show up in my trading account, right?
Yeah. So essentially, you would get a wallet which holds your digital euros. The money that you have in there is also guaranteed by the central bank, and you could use that to provision just pay at any online, offline, at every place, at very low cost and with almost no fraud risk. So just like the Vero, lower cost for merchants, lower risk of fraud,
Has it also like a limited amount, like Bitcoin? There's only like 21 million Bitcoins available when everything is harvested. How do you call it? Not harvested.
But it functions as a currency. So it is, there's no limited amount of currency as well. Okay. It is just like current.
So the euro coins do.
Now, a lot of the detail is not really played out and also not completely known to me. I think they're also still trying to figure some things out. It's still to launch a few years in the future. But yeah, I understand that from a European perspective, it makes a lot of sense to create an alternative payment infrastructure to rival the dominance of foreign companies like Visa, MasterCard with their card rails, which essentially also PayPal is working on, because that is the, you know, just look at their stock market prices and their profitability margins. You know, it's a private enterprise that's taking some percentages from the economy, but they do so very well, right? So it's very tough also to create a rival network that has taken 70, 80 years to build and push it out of the way. Now, what the benefit is that Europe has, politics has above, but it's still a private initiative like, you know, is that they can make it compulsory legal tender, meaning they can force merchants to accept it. And then the merchants have to integrate it by law. And that is, of course, very different than a commercial payment method that tries to win market share.
Okay, I got it like from the banking industry perspective or European perspective, creating like an alternative gateway. So you're becoming less dependent, but still I have a hard time to figure out what problem will be solved from consumer perspective. Eventually, it's only macroeconomic perspective where like there's less taxation that is then going into the US companies like Visa Card and Master. So more money for schools and hospitals in Europe. But that's a very theoretical, far-fetched construct, right? So people want to know, okay, what I'm getting more now when I'm buying those X with a digital euro versus Bitcoin, right? So it's like, I try to break it down that way.
So, I mean, essentially, if you make the digital money streams safer and cheaper, it will be less costs for everybody. And that should then trickle down to price advantages for the consumers.
Okay. So, but this leads me to my last question.
It's not something that happens within 6 months, clearly.
Yeah. But that leads me to my last question. So I've recording a lot of like Commerce Trucks podcast also outside of Germany. And then I'm seeing countries like Pakistan or Saudi where a lot of stuff is like paid still in cash or like cash by delivery. And this makes me wondering. So I hardly see an online shop anymore where you have a cash payment kind of alternative, but still people are, they love the cash in Germany. I still cannot get rid of my coin-based payment interface here. And now I'm seeing more and more hardware entities that usually took cash before, like parking payment interfaces where it was clear that you had to put money in there, especially in Northern Germany. There was no card payment alternative. And now those have been switched now to card payment. And when you're like entering the parking facility, there's like a big sign, no cash payment possible, which in most countries in the Nordics or in the US would be like ridiculous because it's clear that there's no cash payment. But like we still seem to be like in a transition phase. And I'm wondering is if this cash payment somehow in the future is still a thing, because I'm hearing more and more that even amounts beyond like 5,000 euro will be monitored by some of the government entities because it smells like fraud. And they are right, because if you pay your handyman 20K in cash, so obviously there is an incentive to do so, which is not the incentive advised by the government, I would say. So what's your, let it put like this way, rather neutral. So what is your way looking into this kind of whole cash thing, which especially in Germany is still big?
It is big in Germany, but it's declining quite rapidly. So also Germany is becoming more digital, not just in payments, but also in payments. So especially COVID gave it a bit of a kickstart, this transformation, because cash all of a sudden became life-threatening because you were handling the same coins. And a lot of stores then adapted and pushed for card payments just for public safety. So, and you see that every year the percentage of cash in society in Germany has been decreasing. I think when I moved to Germany 6 years ago, it was, I think, still 60% or so was cash. I think now we're in the mid-40s. So that's already a very big shift. And you see that just with a few percentage points change year over year, but in a quite stable way. So also Germany become mostly cash free. But the question is, when will that actually happen? Is it 5 years, 10 years, 15 years?
I'm wondering if cash will get the same reputation as Bitcoin is having today. It's like a speculation, and it's used for fraud, right? It's like paying ransoms and like buying drugs at online drug portals. But when the cash rate is like below 10%, and you all always say pay with like 100 euro bills, your local electrician or whatever. So then it becomes clear that like cash is not like the favorite legal payment method anymore. And it feels like that in some cases, because I think it started when they stopped printing I think it was a 500 euro bill.
A 500 euro bill. Well, what is the use of a 500 euro bill if it's not?
Buying a car. I used it already, buying a car. You need a 500 euro bill. What is the biggest now? 200 euros, right?
And you paid for the car in cash.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there was, look, you know, like last time I paid for a car in cash, I don't know, it was like 10, 15 years ago. And then you had to go to the car dealer. He was sending you over this, was like the main car document. When you're holding this document, regardless if you have the car inside or not, you are the owner of the car. So when the dealer handed you this over, he wanted to have cash immediately, because the fastest payment method would have been like 2 or 3 days via transfer, right? That was the only way when you were driving like to a car deal, private car deal, or with a retailer, to do this trade on site. Okay, I want this car. Please give me the red number and give me this like official document. Here's the cash. It was the only method to exchange value. And it's still the case, because that's how cars are traded.
Imagine if you would have a digital euro back then.
Yeah, we don't have the digital euro even today. So I guess we are not getting rid of this. Now we don't have this 500 euro.
That's what instant banking does. You transfer the money and it arrives on his account straight away, and you can see it straight away. And therefore, he can close that transactions there and then. It doesn't have to wait for banks to process these funds, which might take a day or two.
Okay.
But now, if you bring more than 10,000 euros cash to a car dealer, there's a lot of questions you need to answer first and forms you need to fill out in order to be able to transfer.
Yeah, then maybe I buy, you know, that's easy to solve. You buy like $9,500 car at the car dealer plus a $9,500 bike, which comes with a car. It's like two transactions, two documents. Easy. No questions asked.
I think you need two car dealers for that. Because it's the same person, but maybe your wife can bring it. Don't want to give ideas.
Yeah. You see. I think it's
no, but that's exactly, it becomes difficult, right? Manager becomes suspect. So if you go to a supermarket in Sweden, and I know from my own experience, and then you try and pay with cash, they look at you like you're some sort of crook.
Really?
And that is, which is quite the opposite from Germany, where at least the German regulator thinks that digital payments must be something criminal. Well, it's a very normal way of handling transactions from A to B, right? So
are there then Swedish supermarkets already with the same sign at the entrance door, cash only? Not cash only, cards only, no cash?
Yes, the majority of them now, I think. Certainly biological markets or smaller niche supermarkets, they have a card only. And
that makes it hard for robbers.
I'm from the same way.
That makes it very hard for bank robbers and like supermarket robbers to go in there and get some cash.
As well.
Okay. Interesting. So that gave me a lot of like new perspectives. But then very last question. So what's going on with Unser in 2025? What's the big two, three things you're looking forward to?
Well, we're looking to grow. We had a lot of distractions in the past years. They're all behind us. And we're looking to grow. We're looking to bring those platforms together even more. And we're looking to delight a lot of customers with our combined offering of having the full software suite you need to run your business with the payments and integrated part of it.
So, okay, that grows in general, but you're not like, will like the new payment method, Vero, will this change something for you when this is kind of introduced into the market? Is this something you're looking forward saying, okay, that's kind of new business opportunity also for like for you?
Well, we will be one of the early adopters having this as part of our the payment suite that we offer. But then it's still the merchants that need to pick what payment methods they want to offer, and they will offer what the consumers want, right? So we will be facilitating that, but nudging, but it's still up to the market to adapt to new payment method.
And then one last question to Vero. The next time we're going for dinner in Berlin and we are sharing the invoice and I'm sending money to you via Vero, you need a bank accepting Vero as a method, and I also need a bank accepting it as a method. Is it correct, or is it like good enough if only one bank is like on the recipient side or the sender side is doing it?
No, both of you need one.
Okay. Yeah. Then maybe I need to. What was the first bank? The Postbank, right, or Deutsche Bank, or so?
I think they have coverage with all the larger okay. banks, and also in Belgium. And I think the Netherlands will also be switched to Vero. And then they take it from there. But disclaimer, I don't work for them. And excuse me if I got some of the things wrong.
Okay, got it. Robert, thank you for your time.